Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, An Economic Quagmire. I might just retitle this podcast, An Economic Quagmire, because that's what we are dealing with. This is like the Twilight Zone. This is like Groundhog's Day every single day. But nonetheless, it's Thursday. We're going to go through our typical data dive with initial jobless claims, an update to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, and updated figures for M1 and M2 money supply, which actually did come out last week, but I just didn't get to it. So I'll be sure to update the audience on those figures, which, of course, are at all-time highs. Some other news I want to discuss today is global food prices. There was an article out of Bloomberg and several other news agencies highlighting rising and surging global food prices, which, of course, the Capital News has been over, all over, for months now. And the mainstream media is finally catching on to how big of a problem this is and can turn out to be. And then I want to briefly mention how our demented president is now caving in to some Republican demands with respect to taxation. And instead of really jacking up corporate tax rates, he's willing to compromise and say, well, we can create a minimum corporate tax level of about 15%. So there's a floor. We're not going to go below that. I might not necessarily go as high as we were talking about initially, but we'll go that low, no lower, which of course is somewhat contradictory to the argument that the White House and the Democrats have been pushing all along. And that, of course, is we want to do all of this spending, and corporations don't pay their quote-unquote fair share, so we're going to jack up their tax rate so they do pay their fair share to compensate for not paying any taxes for all of those years and to compensate for all of the spending that we are engaged in. So how are you going to square this one now? That's how you were going to finance all of this crap. Now, it was nonsense to begin with, but that wasn't their story. So this is just par for the course. This is just one idiot at the helm after the next, changing the tune, trying to get something because they want infrastructure spending. That's what this is all about, and they're going to get it. Make no mistake about that. As I have been mentioning here for months, they will get it. They are not done spending money that we do not have. It'll be piecemeal. Maybe it'll have a $1 trillion tag to it. I don't know. I'm not so certain about that. But piecemeal, I can most definitely see. And of course, in aggregate, it will total in the trillions. But that's okay because the Federal Reserve will continue to print the money. The crackheads on Wall Street will continue to love this command and control economy that we have established. And markets will just continue grinding higher until they don't. So again, an economic quagmire. So let me first get to this article out of Bloomberg. Global food prices surged to near decade high, the UN says. Global food prices extended their rally to the highest in almost a decade, heightening concerns over bulging grocery bills as economies struggle to exit the COVID-19 crisis. A United Nations gauge of world food costs climbed for a 12th straight month in May, its longest stretch in a decade. The continued advance risks accelerating broader inflation, complicating central banks' efforts to provide more stimulus. Oh, really? Drought in key Brazilian growing regions is crippling crops from corn to coffee, and vegetable oil production growth has slowed in Southeast Asia. That's boosting costs for livestock producers and risks further straining global grain stockpiles that have been depleted by soaring Chinese demand. And I question why the Chinese are buying so much. Are they preparing for war or some type of conflict? The surge has stirred memories of 2008 and 2011, when price spikes led to food riots in more than 30 nations. Well, there it is. It's about time that they start connecting the dots and making people, at the very least, aware as to what this can turn into. And I do not believe that the markets, the global equity markets, have properly priced any of this in. Because, to be perfectly frank with you, they don't have to, because they have central bankers backstopping them and federal governments backstopping them. So they don't have to concern themselves with real-world situations. They just continue to live in la-la land until they no longer can. So remember that. The surge has stirred memories of 2008 and 2011 when price spikes led to food riots in more than 30 nations, primarily the Arab Spring. Quote, we have very little room for any production shock. We have very little room for any unexpected surge in demand in any country. Well, check, check. This is according to a UN economist. He continues, any of those things could push prices up further than they are now, and then we could start getting worried. Well, you should be worried now, my friend. The prolonged gains across the staple commodities are trickling through to store shelves, with countries from Kenya to Mexico reporting higher food costs. The pain could be particularly pronounced in some of the poorest import-dependent nations, which have limited purchasing power and social safety nets as they grapple with the pandemic. The UN's index is treading at its highest since September of 2011, with last month's gain of 4.8% being the biggest in more than 10 years. All five components of the index rose during the month, with the advance led by pricier vegetable oils, grains, and sugar. The world's hunger problem has already reached its worst in years as the pandemic exacerbates food inequalities, compounding extreme weather and political conflicts. And we have severe drought here in the U.S. on the West Coast. And of course, California is one of the largest agricultural producing states in the country. And a lot of people don't realize that, but it is. So, and don't forget that there have been massive wildfires over the past several years. And when you have this massive drought, we can anticipate the same and how that's going to trickle not only through to agricultural products, but also through the financial markets because of the insurance costs that this is going to wreak havoc on, and perhaps housing prices as well if houses are destroyed, along with businesses. Let's hope that doesn't happen. There were other elements that exacerbated skyrocketing food costs a decade ago. For example, oil prices neared $150 a barrel. Could you imagine oil today at $150 a barrel? What'll happen? Double current levels. And there was a wave of trade restrictions by major grain shippers. Costs for rice, one of the world's food staples, have remained relatively subdued during the current agricultural price surge. But that's another thing to keep in mind, rising oil prices, which are slowly but surely taking place right now. Gains in the past year have been fueled by China's unpredictably huge purchases of foreign grain, and world reserves could hold relatively flat in the coming season. Again, this is according to the UN economists. Summer weather across the Northern Hemisphere will be crucial to determine if U.S. and European harvests can make up for crop shortfalls elsewhere. He continues, we are not in the situation we were back in 2008-2010 when inventories were really low and a lot of things were going on. However, we are in sort of a borderline. It's a borderline that needs to be monitored very closely over the next few weeks because weather is either going to really make it or create really big problems. Well, let's hope that it makes it. Let's hope that there is ample supply that can keep some sort of lid on rising prices. Let's hope that that's the case. But I'm not so certain that it is. So that's why we continue to monitor this very, very closely, because revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. We witnessed this a decade ago when global debt levels were a fraction of what they are today. Yes, there were supply disruptions then. They pale in comparison to today. And there's just one problem after the next lined up right now. That's how fragile the system is. So I'm glad that Bloomberg wrote this article. It is informative, and you need to share it with as many people as you possibly can, or something like it, just so people are aware of what is taking place globally speaking. Because a lot of times, especially in this country, Americans just don't get enough exposure to what's taking place outside of our borders, and that's a true shame because it does come back to affect us as well. On the market front, we have the Forex markets. We have the dollar index at 90 spot 55, so rallying today. It was flirting with that 90 handle during last evening's podcast. So again, 90 spot 55. This is, I guess, off the back of some stronger economic data that came across the wires. We're going to get to that here momentarily. And it was pretty much a dollar-based rally across the board, across all the major currency pairs. Bitcoin is currently selling off about 3 percentage points right now to trade at $38,000 per coin. On the futures front, we have the U.S. exchanges. They're all relatively flat. There's nothing to report right now. Japanese cash trade is currently in the red, giving back about 0.4%. A mixed bag across the pond in Europe, with the British exchange being down the most, giving back 0.6%. 1%. Cash trade in Australia putting on a gain of 0.33% and hitting an all-time high. Chinese stocks are currently in the red, giving back about 0.1%. On the commodity price front, cooling off a little bit from yesterday's rally. WTI $68.74 a barrel. Brent at $71.21. Natural gas hanging on to the three handle at $3.06. Gasoline $2.20. Gold and silver took a hit. Gold giving back a couple weeks worth of price gains, now trading at $1,870 per ounce. Nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down, and gold has been slowly but surely taking out one level of resistance after the next. So these are the types of little corrections that you want to see in what I do believe is a long-term bull market run. So that any type of pullback is the opportunity to acquire more gold mining stocks, etc. Same thing with silver. Selling off handily today a couple percentage points to now trade at $27.40 an ounce, but same situation. This is a gift from the marketplace as far as I'm concerned to look at acquiring more physical silver, more stocks as well. Copper is at $4.49 a pound, and lumber is at $1,326 per 1,000 linear board feet. So flirting with the level it was yesterday. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.63%, so it remains range-bound where it has been for the past few months. So getting to the initial jobless claims report, the number comes across the wires at 385,000. 385,000 is the number on a seasonally adjusted basis for the week ending May 29th. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, the number came in at 425,000. Back in March 14th of 2020, the figure was 256,000, just to put things into perspective. So we're getting closer to where we were prior to the pandemic, which is a good thing. Making our way through the report, continuing claims for the week ending May 22nd on a seasonally adjusted basis comes in at about 3.8 million, a week-over-week increase of about 169,000. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, continuing claims came in at 3.5 million, a week-over-week increase of some 23,000. With respect to the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, one of the children of the Nobody Cares Act 1.0, for the week ending May 29th, 76,000 Americans filed a claim, an initial claim, for the PUA program. In aggregate, across all forms of unemployment insurance, regular state, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, PUA and PEUC, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and a work share, gives us a grand total of about 15.4 million Americans continue to claim some form of unemployment insurance benefit. 15.4 million. This is for the week ending May 15th. Recall that the aggregate figure lags by a couple of weeks. This gives us a de facto unemployment rate of 11.1%. Tomorrow is going to be the first Friday of the month, so we will receive the official jobs report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics for the month of May. And as of April, as of now, still, we have an official unemployment rate of 6.1%. Okay? And with respect to the aggregate figure, some of the biggest drop-offs were in regular state, which saw a week-over-week decrease of about 192,000. The PUA program saw a week-over-week decrease of about 147,000. And extended benefits saw a week-over-week decrease of about 129,000. And we saw a big drop-off in extended benefits last week as well, which is probably just more a function of these programs expiring. That's pretty much where we are at this juncture. And one of the biggest gains week over week was in the PEUC program, a week over week increase of 102,000. So that's it for the initial jobless claims report. Other data that came across the wires today was the ADP jobs figure, which again, I don't like to give too much attention to it, but when we saw such a discrepancy between what the markets were anticipating the official jobs report was going to indicate last month and what ADP came out with and what actually was the figure in the jobs report, again, 266,000. Meanwhile, the markets were anticipating somewhere close to a million. Some were even at $1.2 million, and you get $266,000. Something is not right, especially when ADP gives us a number for April of $742,000. So how does ADP give us a figure of 742,000 jobs created in the month of April? Market analysts are forecasting job gains of 1 million, maybe even more than that. And then the BLS comes out and says, no, 266,000. That was it. But now, for the month of May, ADP is telling us that it's 978,000 private sector jobs were created. 978,000. Well, isn't that closer to a million? So let's see what the official jobs report has to say tomorrow. So all eyes and ears are going to be paying attention to this phony baloney report. But nonetheless, it's an important number. It's an important data metric that we continue to monitor. That's why I have been reading that report in its entirety for the past year plus since this pandemic started, because I want the audience to understand the report in its entirety, not just the headlines that come across the wires. We read the whole thing. And you can take from it what you will, but at least you're getting the whole dose. And that, I think, is beneficial for the purpose of understanding what's really going on here. But, as I stated, with respect to April's jobs report, that 266,000, that was basically a miracle. That was a godsend for the federal government, the White House, and for the Federal Reserve. Because had the figure come out at 1 million, what would these idiots have done? They would have panicked, more so than they're already panicking now. Because, well, you got a million jobs. Well, clearly, this miraculous V-shaped economic recovery is well afoot. It's well underway. You can start tapering. You can start reducing the balance sheet. Dare you even start talking about increasing interest rates? Before, you weren't even thinking about doing it. Now you might have a conversation where you do think about it, if the number was 1 million. But no, it wasn't. It wasn't even close. It was 266,000. So now they can say, well, look, folks, don't you see what's going on here? There's a long way to go. Yeah, we spent several trillion dollars we don't have, robbing our children blind of their future growth and prosperity. But who cares? We're just filling a void right now, making things look better than what they actually are, putting small businesses out of work. They're non-essential. Even though they offer the same goods and services as the big box stores and major corporations, they're essential, you're not. We'll create one emergency facility after the next, as we discussed yesterday, because the Fed announced, oh, we're going to taper our corporate bond holdings. Oh, wow, a measly $14 billion, which is still a lot of money. $14 billion is still a lot of money. It just doesn't sound like it anymore because we're in the land of trillions. And I'll put that into perspective here momentarily when we get to the Fed's balance sheet. But that 266,000 figure was great for the system. It was great for the idiots at the helm because they could say, look, we got to do more. Yes, we've done all of this. Yes, we've expanded the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. Yes, we've spent more money. Yes, we've sent one stimulus check after the next out there. But look how bad this is. Look how many people are still suffering. Look how much more we have to do with money we don't have. We are a first world banana republic. And if we continue this, we're going to be a third world banana republic in the not too distant future. And there's no signs of stopping. And I do believe Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, is expected to make comments tomorrow, which I imagine is going to be some sort of damage control for the jobs report, whether it's a big number or a small number, just to come out and sort of calm the market down, whatever their knee-jerk reaction may or may not be. So pay attention to what that idiot has to say. I'm sure it'll be fascinating. And then we got news out of Russia, where the Russian finance minister has announced that their sovereign wealth fund and some of their reserves, they're getting rid of the U.S. dollar. They don't want to hold U.S. dollars. They're selling off U.S. dollar assets. They don't want them. They want to get into euros and gold. Well, I can agree with them on gold, but getting into another phony baloney fiat currency doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I understand it. It's probably a little bit more geopolitically strategic for the Russians because they are heavily involved in Europe, especially with their energy, particularly with Germany, and Germany needs that energy, and they want it. regardless of the back and forth and trying to side with the United States against Russia on this, that, or the other, it's the largest economy in Europe. They need the energy. They want the pipeline with Russia to supply them with natural gas. It's most likely going to go through. So it makes sense for Russia to want to get involved and put more euros on their books, and most definitely gold. And they have been slowly but steadily building up their reserves in gold. So do they know something that the rest of us don't know? Or do they know what we know here at the Capital News? Gold is money. This is not its first rodeo. You want to bet? You want to speculate? You want to gamble on cryptocurrencies? Be my guest. Understand the risks that you are taking. I'm not gonna bet the farm on speculation. I'm not going to bet the farm on something that has not been tested and proven. But I will put my money where my mouth is when it comes to precious metals, commodities, and other valuable assets. Because they have seen turbulent times. They have withstood those eras. For better or worse, they're still standing. It's no mistake that the Russians and other central banks and other countries have been building up their gold reserves, and China has been another one of them. So might that be indicating something going on behind the scenes? I think it does. Federal Reserve's balance sheet has hit an all-time high. Surprise, surprise, now standing at $7.935 trillion. Again, an all-time high. This is a week-over-week increase of $32 billion. So as we stated yesterday, and as I just stated here previously, their corporate debt, quote-unquote taper, is going to amount to about $14 billion. And they're not going to do that in a week. They're going to stretch that out through the end of the year, they said. If that, $14 billion. So I did the math here real quick. $14 billion divided by 7.935 trillion comes out to 0.176%. 0.176%. Well, Nelly, stop the presses. They are really getting back to normal, aren't they? $14 billion is a drop in the bucket. Now, you could say, let's just look at what they have done since the pandemic. All right, well then cut it in half because their balance sheet has basically doubled since the pandemic. So, instead of it being 0.176%, let's just call it 0.35 to 0.36%. Still a drop in the bucket compared to what they have done. It's complete madness. Again, it's an economic quagmire. M1 money stock for the end of April, hitting an all-time high, no surprise. $18.935 trillion M1 money stock for the end of April. Before the pandemic, this figure was $4 trillion. $4 trillion. Now, they did change the definition and how they calculate M1, but nonetheless, that just goes to show you how big of an increase we have witnessed in just a little bit over a year. That screams of panic. That screams that these idiots are boxed in, which I have been talking about since 2019 when this podcast came online. Not during the pandemic, not when this was about to hit. Well before we even knew of COVID-19 or any pandemic or lockdown or restrictions. We have been all over this. This was my first Capital Economics presentation, Are Central Banks Trapped? Yes, they were then in 2019. They most definitely are today. They know it, and they are extremely panicked, believe me, when I tell you. M2 money supply, end of April, also hitting an all-time high. $20.109 trillion. This almost equates to our GDP, okay? That's how big this is, just to put this into perspective. You look at these charts, which again, I showed you on another Capital Economics presentation earlier this year. I believe it was back in February already. Monetary Measures Part 1 and Part 2. You want to see ridiculous? Check out those presentations. Check out these charts. Go to the Federal Reserve's Economic Data website, FRED, F-R-E-D, Federal Reserve Economic Data Type in M1 or type in M2, click it, look at these charts. You do not need to be a mathematician or an economist to understand it. This does not look right, and it doesn't look right because it isn't. What you're looking at is a crime. This is an economic crime against humanity. That's all this is. This is a banana republic in action. This is stealing so much future growth and prosperity from younger generations and even generations yet to exist. It's not even funny. It's un-American, it's unethical, and it's criminal. That's all it is. But they're going to continue to do it because it's all they know how to do. So we covered a lot of information here, as we typically do. I wanted to get through all of that, and I'm glad that we did. So pay attention to these global food prices, because revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. Pay attention to the fact that equity markets are not properly pricing in these types of geopolitical risks, as far as I'm concerned. Of course, I could be wrong about that, but I believe that to be the case. What's going to happen with more infrastructure spending? Is that going to be the next carrot that the White House and the Democrats continue to dangle out there in front of the markets to keep these crackheads happy? Don't worry, you need some more juice. We're going to do it. Here's another $500 billion here, another $600 billion there, and before you know it, we're well over $1 trillion. Could very well be the case. Tomorrow is going to be a big economic reporting day with the jobs data coming across the wires. And again, I anticipate Jay Powell will do some sort of damage control. Whether the number looks good or whether it looks bad, he's just going to simply be there to continue to condition the markets and the crackheads that everything's going to be okay. There's going to be more monetary methadone going into the system regardless of what happens. We're not going to taper. We're not going to taper. We're not going to taper. That's going to be the story because that's all they can say. Inflation is transitory. Not really here. It's minor. Don't pay any attention to it. It's because of the base effects due to the pandemic. Don't worry about it. These idiots can't hit water if they fell out of a boat. But don't worry, trust them. It's an economic quagmire. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.